Okay, good evening, everyone. I'm Jim Alcoholic. This isn't quite my forte of public speaking. Today, you know, I was trying to get a few thoughts together and write down some things. I didn't get very far. This is about as much as I got. And I figured, you know, most of the speakers that I hear at speaker meetings are the ones that just do it right off the cuff. So I'm going to do my best here, and we'll see what happens in the next 40 minutes or so. So anyway, I'm Jim Alcoholic. Sobriety date, 9/11/2017. Now, that date is 9/11/2001. I think most everyone knows and here has experienced that day and what it is to American history, world history. 9/11/2017 is a day, though, I will never forget until the day I die. It was a beautiful Monday morning, and my wife was she was taking me to Farley Rehab Center in Williamsburg, and she told me, "You think I'm driving you to prison, don't you?" And in actuality, she was driving me to save my life. 9/11/2017, Pink Cloud says 7 years, 8 months, 19 days. Now, if you put things in perspective, for a lot of people in our rooms around here in Suffolk, and we are very fortunate, we got a lot of people with a lot of years of sobriety. For some people, they may say that's a lot, just starting out. Hour to hour, day to day, you know? And for really, in actuality, for all of us, it's day to day. Because we know that any time we take that first drink, it could be the end. Anyway, for me, 9/11/2017, 7 years, 8 months, 19 days, a miracle for me. I think, how in God's name, that a person going from drinking a fifth to a half a liter of scotch every night still be alive. And it was only by the grace of God, my faith, my higher power in Jesus Christ, my Catholic faith, my wife, this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all you people in these rooms that have saved me, and that I'm standing here before you this evening. Basically, we'll just start, you know. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia. My mother was from Brooklyn, New York. My father was from what they call the country, Harrisonburg, Virginia. They met in the beginning of World War II, got married. My father was a pharmacy mate in the Navy. He went on to pharmacy school, went to Richmond, went to pharmacy school. And he had a small pharmacy in the west end of Richmond. Unfortunately, my parents divorced when I was 2 years old. And so I had I didn't see my father very much, but I adored him. He was a wonderful, kind man. And, you know, he was an alcoholic. And, you know, we would see the times that he would come pick me up or come pick my sister up, we'd go for a ride or go to the country where he would go to back home to see my grandparents in Harrisonburg. He had 8 brothers and sisters, and it was quite an event. Lots of alcohol, lots a lot of drinking. And I always saw him, he always had this crate in the back of it in his trunk, and it was always filled with these pints of Old Crow, if you remember that. I don't know if they still make it, but he loved his Old Crow. And he had a pharmacy in Richmond. I spent a lot of time there. Eventually we moved closer to his pharmacy where I was able to get, I could ride my bicycle. I went to Thomas Jefferson High School, and it was just a couple of blocks away from his pharmacy on Broad Street there, and I spent a lot of time a lot of time in the soda fountain, drinking a lot of the profits, the ice cream and the soda and the floats. And anyway, it was, I could see, you know, him, his alcoholism taking effect. Of course, I didn't. I was just a young kid. I was, so I didn't really know anything about the disease or what was going on. But I did always see him taking out Old Crow, and then he had the Old Crow back in one of the bays in the pharmacy. He was always taking, it seemed like, a shot of that. And then one Sunday morning, we're at the pharmacy, and I went back into the back, and he was slumped. It was December 4th, 1966, another day I'll never forget. Slumped on the desk, and it either had a stroke or suffering some form of hepatic coma. Anyway, 2 days later, he died, a cirrhosis of the liver. And my world was, it was devastating. And of course, I was only 15 years old, 15. And so world kind of came crumbling down because I spent a lot of that time in his pharmacy working there. And I wanted to be a pharmacist, and eventually I did go to pharmacy school and do that. I'm a general dentist now. I've practiced for over 40 years. And I had offices in Portsmouth and Chesapeake. And because of alcohol, I virtually lost everything that I had. I lost my dental license, I lost my practice, I lost everything I had in my office. I lost a staff of people that I had working for me for over 30 years. I lost virtually all of my savings. I lost my humility, I lost my self-respect. I didn't lose my wife. I almost lost my house. And I didn't lose my faith in God, and I didn't lose my life. And it's only because of this program here. I just want to say, while I was growing up, I was, one of my passions was baseball. And I spent a lot of time, and it was called Parker Field. And at that time, the team that played there, Richmond Virginians, actually happened to be the farm team for the Yankees. Now, back in the 60s, everybody loved the Yankees, right? Mickey Mantle, Whitey Ford, Yogi Berra, all those guys. And one year they came through, the Yankees came through to play a exhibition game. Now, you have to remember those old ballparks. You know, the ball players had to actually walk from the clubhouse through the concourse to get to the field. So everybody had access to these. Not like these guys today. You can't, you know, get close to these guys today. And I'll never forget Mickey Mantle. He came out, and it was just he and I together. It was amazing. I had already gotten his autograph, you know, on a baseball card, on a scorecard, a couple other things. And I went and getting one more. He said, "Kid, get out of here. I'm not signing your baseball anymore." I mean, you know, Mickey Mantle could be pretty surly at times, but he was nice about it. But he said, "Get out of here." But anyway, the point is, little did I know that someone that I idolized, Mickey Mantle, and also my father, would both die of a disease that I would have, and they both died of that. And I was continuing on the same course that they were. After my father died, it was kind of tough. A couple of years later, my mother met this man, and he was an alcoholic. And happened one a week or about 2 days before I was supposed to graduate. Before in my high school graduation, they were in bed smoking, drinking. Apartment caught on fire. My mother ended up in hospital, and I ended up with this fellow who was alcoholic. We ended up in a flat on Gray Street in Richmond, third story flat in Gray Street, and I had lived with him for the entire summer. My mother, in the at that time, in the 60s, of course, burn therapy was not not very advanced, and she almost died. But fortunately, they did a skin graft, and she survived. They ended up getting married, and we moved to a house out in the West End. And for the next couple of years, every night, he would bring home a bottle of Kentucky Gentleman. It's amazing, I remember these bourbons, these Old Crow Kentucky Gentlemen. Oh, it was horrible. And it was just every night he would drink the whole bottle, pass out, and then about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, he was up and ready to cause all kinds of havoc. It was horrible. It was for 3 years, it was a living hell. At that time, so we eventually got out of that, or my mother got out of that relationship, thank God, still alive. I worked at a grocery store on Main Street in Richmond for 5 years. I went to Virginia Commonwealth for 2 years. Then after that, I went to pharmacy school to try to carry on because I always wanted to be a pharmacist in honor of my father. And I did that, and finally I got out in 1974. Then I decided, you know what? I don't think I want to fill prescriptions the rest of my life, so I went to dental school. Anyway, went to dental school 4 years of that, and so 9 years of college now. So finally get out. I met a girl that she was in pharmacy school. We got married in my junior year of pharmacy school, junior year of dental school. When I got out of dental school, I came down here. I got into U.S. Coast Guard over here at Portsmouth at Craney Island. So I was there for 5 years, and it's in 5 years the Coast Guard. There's no stranger to a lot of parties and alcohol and Oak Club, the Enlisted Men's Club, and so I still wasn't all through college and dental school and pharmacy school. I never really drank. I was just focused on getting through school. Really, I did no drinking, anything like that. And then when I got out after I got out after 5 years, went into private practice here locally in Portsmouth with a dentist there, and so started that relationship. Unfortunately, I had an affair with one of the people in the office, one of the girls there, and that's one thing, if you don't know, you don't ever want to mess around in your office. That's that doesn't work. Anyway, ended up, got a divorce, and things went along fairly well. We opened up another office in Chesapeake, so we had two offices, and just practice dentistry. But you have to realize dentistry is one of the most stressful professions that there is. At one point, we were had the highest suicide, divorce, and alcohol and drug problem of any of the professions. And eventually that took its toll on me. After a few years, I met another, which is my wife now. We got married, and she was a artist, and she went away did a lot of trips during the summer for continuing education that she did. And I hatched this plan that I built. We had a detached garage. We live over in Sleepy Lake, and we had this detached garage, two car, and I converted it into a sports bar, a man cave. It was wonderful. I had stone fireplace, I had a gigantic bar, 6 TVs and all the way around, and it was just unfortunately became a place that my drinking really took off. And the ravages of general dentistry just took its toll on me. And I could see my, I unfortunately had another affair. And that was, figured that, you know what, maybe I need a little help. So I went to my first rehab. This is back around 2010. And went to a 30-day rehab up in Maryland, Father Martin Ashley, in Havre de Grace. It was a beautiful place on the banks of the Chesapeake Bay. But I only went there because I thought that I was, you know, my drinking was a little bit out of control. I didn't believe that I was an alcoholic. And I just went there just to get a little help. I did not embrace the program at all. When I came back, I did start going to a meeting over in Norfolk Tuesday evening, so I went kind of kicking and screaming. I didn't embrace the program at all, and after a few meetings, had a bottle of scotch in the back of the car, and as soon as I got out of that meeting, fixed me a nice tall drink and say, why do I need this? After all, you know, so... unfortunately, it just, you know, I didn't embrace the program. And then, so as the years go by, isolating in the, I called it the Yankee room. I had all my Yankee memorabilia in there, and just isolating and drinking more. And so, finally the alcohol was starting to catch up, and I had my first bout with medical where it was taking toll on my body, and I was had to go to the hospital. I always had alcoholic hepatitis, and I don't know if you all have had that, but it's no fun. I spent a week in the hospital. The doctors pleaded with me, go get some help. I said, no, I can do this by myself. I can't leave my practice. Anyway, I come home, I'll never forget, I call one of my buddies in New York, and he said, Jim, now don't you have to go to meetings for this thing? He said, and I told him, no, I don't need the meetings. I know what those people do. All they do is read a book, and and so I know what they do. I can do this by myself. Being a medical person, I thought I was smart enough for that, and I wasn't, of course. So goes on, and then about I think it was about 2016, my partner comes to me after we've been in practice for over 30 years, I guess, that he wanted to dissolve the practice. So like I said, we had 2 offices, one in Deep Creek and another one here in Portsmouth. And so when I went split the practice, so I took the office in Chesapeake. And I was it. I was used to having, with the 2 offices, I had my partner who was a very strong VMI guy, adjutant general, yeah. Didn't put up with a whole lot. His wife worked in the office and we had an office manager. So all the problems went through them, all the administrative problems. I did, I was able to just concentrate on dentistry. But all the administrative problems basically pretty much went through them. And then, like I said, when the offices split and I had my own office, I was it. And with that, with the pressure of the administration and the just doing dentistry, I couldn't handle it. I just cracked. I mean, whenever, one of the girls would come into your office and close the door and said, I need to talk to you, you knew you had a problem. And so it caught up, and my drinking just kind of escalated as the years went, in the next, 12 months or so. That was like October of 16. And I went, we got to 2017, August of 2017, I'll never forget. I had a patient, that big guy, and I was, this is like August 18th, and it was like the worst day that I ever had in my life in practice. I had this guy, and I was taking out an upper wisdom tooth, and I'd done hundreds of those, but sometimes when you pop this tooth out, it will break a piece of bone up there, it's called a tuberosity, and it can tear the roof of the mouth or the palate. And it did. I could not get this guy to stop bleeding. So of course I had to call the EMTs. They came and took him away, carted him out, you know, which is embarrassing. See somebody coming and carting out of your office. That's not something that you ever want to see, you know, or ever happened to me. And from there, it was all downhill. I just, the next couple of weeks, I was just, and also I was, you know, with the anxiety, I was taking lorazepam. I had gotten a prescription from my physician, but I also had found a place, some guy over in Nepal, of all places, and I was getting medication from this guy too. So I had a prescription from my physician, and then also as much as I wanted it, and I was also taking Ambien at the same time. So I was just out of control. I was just, and then, you know, you're getting up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and getting a drink. And then you get up, and then it started that I knew I'd hit a point of no return when I started to have a drink before I left for the office. And then I had some, I would have a bottle in the car, and I would even have a drink or a nip before I got to the office. And so one morning, it was just a couple weeks after this event with the patient, I came in, the girls could tell that I was not fit. I had my briefcase, I hit the wall with it, and so anyway, canceled the patients for the day, I was done. And then somebody, one of the girls, which I don't know who it was, but I have a pretty good idea, called the state board, and they got involved. And then, so from there, the next week, the state board comes knocking on my door. And I had, in that time, I knew that I had to get some help. So I'd made some, my wife and I had made some plans for me to get up to Farley, like I said. And we were gonna go up there. I thought I could only go for a couple weeks, ended up 10 weeks. But anyway, the state board came in, and I told this investigator, told her everything. I was tired of lying, and I told her basically everything about the Xanax, the alcohol, and so I went home that night and told my wife, whew, boy, I'm glad I've got the state board all done with. little did I know what was about to happen. So anyway, to move on here, I went to, next week we went to Farley, 9/11/2017, where I spent next 10 weeks. I thought maybe I would get out of there in 2 weeks. There was no way. 10 weeks there. And it was there that it was difficult. You know, I don't know if any of y'all have been to Farley, but it's no place for sissies, I can tell you that. And my counselor and I, we didn't really see eye to eye, but that's what's supposed to happen, you know? Counselor's not gonna be your lovey-dovey, you know, everything's good, Jim, you know? And it was there also, you know, that about halfway through that I think I had the spiritual awakening, saying where, you know what, I can do this. You know, I can do this. It's like I said, how can someone going from a half a liter of scotch a day go all of a sudden stop drinking? And it's only through your faith and your higher power. But anyway, we'll get to that. And So anyway, I can do this. But also I had to enroll in this program called Health Practitioners Monitoring Program. It's a program given by, most every state has it, but it's for practitioners that have gotten in trouble with drugs. And instead of losing, you know, their license, they can still, if they're enrolled in this program, they can still practice. But there's a lot of things that you have to do. And one of them was you were tested about randomly about every 7 to 10 days. We have to make 3 meetings a week. I had to meet with individual counselor, which was once a week, and also a professional meeting once a week. So, you know, I said, I can stop this drink, but I'm not sure I can do all this other stuff. But anyway, I get out, finally get out, and it was the day before Thanksgiving. And I went to, and I thought I was a hotshot, man. I made 10 weeks through Farley. I thought I knew it all. It didn't take long to find out how little I did know. And I went to the meeting at over there in Suffolk at the church on 58 with St. Stephen's, it doesn't matter. It was over there, and it was the Thursday afternoon meeting, and it was one of our esteemed AA members. You all know him, John D. came up and said, "Hey, Jim, you know, we have a meeting tonight if you want to come." And I said, "Hey, that may be pushing it a little bit, but..." So one meeting in a day was good, but anyway, they came in open arms, and I learned very early, like I said, how much I didn't know, and how much wisdom and knowledge there was in those rooms, and that just to kind of sit down, shut up, and listen to some of these people, and how much that they can teach you, and. Fortunately, I got a sponsor, and after I got out of Farley, I wasn't able to go back to work. I was prohibited by HPMP. I couldn't go back until April. So I'd been out now since September to April. And in my practice, and I had somebody in there, that another dentist, that was almost a disaster while he was in there helping out. And you know, when you lose your license, insurance companies don't stay around very long. They get out. And when patient doesn't have insurance, or you're not taking, the patients don't come. So the practice started. It was difficult. Anyway, worked for about 2 months. This is in 2018, right? And around June 2018, a friend of mine, a dentist friend, asked me to come and help them out at a base up in a National Guard base, just for a day to examine patients. And I didn't get permission from HPMP. And I told my caseworker, I told him, you know, and I thought it was just a half a day. What's the big deal? You know, they thought it was a big deal. I got kicked out of the program. So that was June of 8. So like I said, it was about, I got this case a week later, and one day, I get a call from my caseworker saying I'm being kicked out of the program, which means I can't work. My license was dependent upon working or being in this program. I get a suit from my malpractice company saying that they were want to do a rescission, which is basically taking away my malpractice coverage for like 10 years because I hadn't been honest with them, or they said I hadn't been honest with them about telling them that I had an alcohol problem on the applications. And then also get a call from the Virginia Pilot saying, we're running a story in Sunday's paper about you making a deal with the Virginia State Board. And so that was in one day. So that was, that was a pretty bad day. And then, as a matter of fact, this is what I had. This is June 21st, 1918. Chesapeake dentist confessed to alcohol, drug abuse to stay in business. That doesn't do a whole lot for your practice either. Anyway, I wasn't able to get back into the program until I think November of that year. So that's for almost 13 months now, 11 to almost a year, I was basically out of my practice. So practice just went to hell. And finally I got my license back, worked. I was a good boy. I did everything. I was going to my meetings, doing what I was told, and passing all my drug tests. And so I worked, and then times are just really, so it goes around, we're about back to 2020, and I get another, I was going to get another helping out at another dental office just for a day. And I had worked a couple weeks, but I hadn't, the total paperwork had not been totally signed, and totally official. HP&P found out, and I got kicked out again. So I was called what they call a recidivist. Yeah, I was a recidivist. I was a repeat offender, which isn't funny. I mean, it's I should have learned, but I didn't. And from there, I lost my license again, and I didn't get it back until the following year. And they weren't, HP&P made me, I had to have a formal hearing, which meant I had to have, it's like one of these congressional hearings where you have the district attorney, commonwealth attorney, your lawyers, their lawyers, 11 members of the State Board of Dentistry, and being grilled through that. But I did, they let me, they said, okay, you can go back in. So. That was about, 2021, then COVID hit. And we had to close down offices. And, it was just one thing after another. It was, I was battling, I thought, every lawyer in Hampton Roads. I had this guy that tried, the tooth that he lawyered up. He had a $500,000 lawsuit against me. My hygienist that would have been with me for over 30 years, we had gotten another hygienist because she wanted to work only part-time, and I got a full-time hygienist. Anyway, she said that she filed a suit against me for $500,000 because of wrongful termination. I had state board attorneys. I had attorneys fighting for my malpractice companies. I had them from A to Z. And it was just really a difficult, dark time. But like I said, I kept the faith. I kept going to meetings, and I kept doing what I was told. Finally, I was just so far behind. My landlord, who was wonderful for me, had been in that office for about 30 years. Locked the door. I couldn't get in. Everything that I had was locked, and I lost everything in there. Eventually, one of the other things that, God puts people in your lives. You know, He may not answer you directly how you want to have things happen, but He'll put things or people in your lives. One of the people He put in my life was another dentist who was, he was my peer monitor. And he was a dentist I knew, not very well, but I had met him through dental meetings. Anyway, we became, he's in the program, 39 years of sobriety. we became dear friends, and he helped me so much in these last, you know, 4 or 5 years. He helped me get through some of these very tough times that were, you know, just so dark and out of control. Finally, in the last couple of years, you know, I prayed and I went to my meetings and my faith. I went to one thing that I learned in this program, and it was wonderful. I loved on Tuesdays, on the I'm sure many of you all have been there, the 11th step. We do the 11th step on Tuesdays at 12:30 over at Westminster. And, you know, they say this program is a spiritual program and not a religious program. And you know, I think I'm a fairly devout Catholic. And I didn't really understand that until we went through this chapter on spirituality and religion. And it says, if I can read just a sec, there are many ways to describe the difference between spirituality and religion, but perhaps the simplest is this. Religion is our attempt to show how much we love God, and spirituality is our attempt to become humble enough to allow our higher power to show us how much we are loved. I try to use faith as one of the big parts of my recovery program, my Catholic faith. I try to go to Mass as much as possible during the week to show God how much I love Him for what He's done for me. And so I prayed, you know, I've done many mission trips in my life, and I had the power, and I was sober, and I had the ability. And I said, God, please let me help there are people somewhere. I was hoping more. You know, I've been to South America, I've been to Nicaragua, I've been to Guyana, I've been to Honduras many times to do mission trips, and I was hoping something like that. And he came through, but he gave me I got a job up in a Medicaid clinic up in Hampton, and that's where I've been the last almost 3 years now. Unfortunately, through all this, I had to claim bankruptcy. I had to get rid of a couple of these lawsuits that I have. You know, it's nothing like waking up in the morning and seeing your bank account. One of the lawyers had filed a claim for $176,000. When you see that in your bank account, that'll wake you up for sure. Anyway, it was just, unfortunately, I had to claim bankruptcy. I have, through hard work, I finally emerged from that. And that's about it. I want to share one thing before I close up here. I think we're coming near the end here, right, Dave? Kind of. Yeah, and so I just want to share this. And I think this will tie a lot of things together here. My sponsor, who happens to be one of Steve's disciples, I was so fortunate to have him as my sponsor the last 7 years. And that's one thing that in this program, I think is your sponsor is kind of the glue to this whole program, to get somebody that can help you, and it ties there. If you do the other things of doing your steps and doing your meetings, get somebody that can help you tie everything together. But I want to share this. This was it's a one line a day. It's a diary. And most of these entries are just, beginning of the year, you get motivated, you want to, I'm going to write these things down. So I did. So most of these entries are all from January. But this is January 1st, 2019. I know God's will working not on my time. Finance is critical, $0 in accounts, late on rent and mortgage. My wife's dad's in the hospital. Despondent but hopeful, keep going. And then down to 2000, January 1st, 2012. Wow, what a year, 2021. There is something working with God in my life. What is it? Went to Mass twice today. All same problems exist, no money, broke, still sober. Dr. Z, my mentor, old for them. January 2nd, 2019, walls caving in financially. Of all, no money in accounts, state board calling. Faith in God very strong, have not given up. God will see me through. And January 2nd, year later, went to Mass, let me go over here. January 3rd, waiting for HPMP, more bills piling up, but have faith in God's power and will to help me. And it's just January 4th, 2019, maybe worst day of recovery in 15 months, went to Mass and prayed so hard, woke up feeling so good. So good to happen, only to be destroyed by two lawyers seemingly to want every material thing that I have. And January 5th, the next day, prayer session, a lot of fears, doubt about future, difficult day thinking about yesterday, keeping the faith. Bankruptcy keeps creeping into concern. Must let God do His will. Basically, you know, it just how dark days can be in your life, right? And all of us have had it, every one of us in here. How dark days can be, and you just can't give up. The key, though, the key to this whole thing, and every day I have to keep sober. If I took a drink, it would be the end. I mean, it would be the end to my being in the program. It would be the end to me practicing, ever practicing dentistry again. And it would just be the end of my profession, which I love. And so it's just, you know, that's the key. You got to keep sober. Get somebody to help you. There are so many people. We're so lucky in this community. So many wise people with so much wisdom. And they're here to help you every day. We talked last night about the 12 step of people helping. And, you know, that's what it's all about. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, great. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Jim. All right, where am I at? Our seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers donation to the church and supplies. The rest is given to the Tidewater Intergroup, District 24, and the General Services Office. And I'm going to open up. Are there any AA-related announcements? Don't speak all at once. All right. I have a couple flyers up here. Let's see, this one's local. We got the 25th anniversary celebration for the Saturday night discussion. There's going to be food and fellowship on, it is the 30th? That's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, 6:30 to 9. Speaker is going to be Billy B from the Sunbury Group. And it says they got all the fixings. So if you want to take a picture of this flyer, feel free to come up after we pray. Then I got one more flyer up here. So the Liberty Bells group is having their 29th birthday party, and they also have an AA pamphlet workshop. That should be pretty cool. Sunday, July 6th, and it's going to be 1100 to 4 p.m., and it's in Colonial Heights. So if you want to check that out, take a picture after this meeting.
I'm Coy Alcoholic.
Nice. Hey, Coy.
My home group, Gracious Living, is having a speaker meeting. It's kind of a new thing for us. June 25th, this gentleman right here, Jake is going to be speaking at Gracious Living, 7:30.
Nice. Thank you, boy. Right on.
There's going to be an anniversary of that meeting. The same young man will be here to celebrate 2 years of Jesus.
Jacob Donald Pollock.
Jake.
Jim, thank you for speaking. That was very wonderful. Next month, we have four gentlemen from Many a Strange Camel. They meet in Norfolk. Wonderful meeting. I went there last month. They are going to be supplying speakers for the whole month. We've got John Rhoda on the 6th, Ben Smith on the 13th,
nice.
Ben Sayers, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be using the last name, Ben S on the 20th, and Tyler S on the 27th. So please come out and hear those guys.
Nice.
Thank you.
Also, the District 24 business, or District 24 picnic is going to be happening on September 20th. We're working on flyers. We'll provide those shortly. If you want to be involved in the committee, please get with me. I'll get you on the committee. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you, Jake.
Thank you.
Are there any other announcements? We also have a big book study, same time, same place, different day, every Tuesday. We get into the big book, and then when we're done with the big book, we get into 12 and 12. So feel free to come out on Tuesdays here. And then I've asked a friend, Jake, to pass out the chips.
Order. I probably should stop this thing.